Good evening, everybody, and welcome to the second episode of the Hockey Writers Live. I'm your host, Chris Wassel, and welcome to a special fantasy hockey-themed edition of the show. That's right, kids, we are on live on the Fantasy Sports Channel and with us. By the way, folks, just so you know, the draft starts at 8:15, so if we lose our focus a little bit here and there, it's honestly not our fault. We're really trying hard to pick the players that could play 50 to 60 games this year, or zero, for our fantasy teams. Joining us, as always, of course, is Joshua Smith. Good evening, Josh.
Good evening, Chris.
And joining us, he got a nice week off last weekend. You know, we're a nice hospital show here. We give holidays off, and that would be welcome to Mr. John Waldman. Good evening, John.
Good evening. How are you doing?
I do pretty darn good, folks. I have to be honest. By the way, for the folks that are wondering, the chat room is getting there. It's like a slow process. Something always seems to go awry with the chat room. We're never quite sure. So it's working on it. Now, the only thing I can really blame it on maybe is the NFL. It's the only reason. But it is up. It is functioning. So for everybody that's wondering, you go over to the show page at www.blogtalkradio.com/THW live. Click on the link. It'll take a little bit of time. It'll load. You'll be able to listen to the show and interact with us. Also, you feel the need, you want to send us a few questions along the way, you can check us out via Twitter and send a question via at Chris Wassel THW. Include the tag THW Rocks, and we'll make sure to get to the show as things may or may not break. It's about approximately a little less than 11 minutes to the first pick of the draft. Using what we've done, draft time is 60 seconds. Keeper League rules for the first four rounds, so hopefully the first few rounds go a little quick. The goal is to get it done in an hour. As everybody knows, the show will end sometime in the later rounds of the draft. And we'll get this going, folks. I guess first off, Josh, is the latest from the leagues that are actually playing.
Yeah, the non-disappointing leagues around the world. We've got a lot of action going on out there, so it's good. Hopefully you guys have been able to watch some games. I guess the big story is over in Russia and Eastern Europe with the KHL. We've got Akbars Kazan leading the league. They're 6-1-1, tops of their respective divisions, Sibir, Novosibirsk, Lev Praha, who's over in the Czech Republic. They've got former NHLers Eric Christensen and Marcel Hossa on the team. So I guess that's as high as star power gets when there's not a lockout. So we'll get to some of the team additions momentarily. And Atlant Moscow is also up there with Nick Zhereyev on the team. They're 5-1-2. So about eight games into the KHL season, a couple high scorers. Somebody who's never played an NHL game, Jory Laterra for Sibir Novosibirsk. 5 goals, 9 assists, 14 points in just 8 games. Followed up by former Flyer Patrick Thorsen, probably best known for the nut shot he absorbed by Mike Green in the playoffs. Dropped him, and the Caps went on to score the goal and send the game to overtime. He plays for St. Pete. He's got 4 goals, 7 assists in 7 games. And former Predator, former KHLer, former Predator again, Alex Radulov, with 9 points in 8 games. But I guess the big story out there in the K is the flood of talent that's coming over from the lockout. Last I checked, there's over 60 NHLers that have signed somewhere in Europe in the various leagues. And, you know, they've got Ovechkin, Anisimov, and Yakupov all signed over there. Magnitogorsk picked up Malkin and Gonchar. I'm sure you guys saw some of that in the news. Just that they're reunited as teammates. A couple other guys, Nick Backstrom of the Wilds over in Dynamo Minsk, and Visnovsky is playing with Bratislava, although I'm sure the Islanders are thrilled that he agreed to play over there after the big kerfluffle that came up when the Ducks traded him to Long Island. Praha, as I mentioned before, they just added Yuri Hudler and Jacob Voracek, so they'll be making some moves up. And St. Petersburg adds Bobrovsky and their new captain, Ilya Kovalchuk. Chris, I'm sure you're excited to see him back on the ice.
I'm excited to see Ilya back on the ice. I'm not excited to see the fact that there's another Ilya on that team. I don't know. Kovalchuk has definite Gagarin and Cup aspirations, but with Ilya Bryzgalov lurking in the pipes, I don't know how happy you can be as a CSKA fan. It could be tough for them. They could
score. If you're a fan of any opposing team, it's a great blessing for you, pretty much. I mean, as a Winnipegger, when Bryzgalov came here last year in a couple of Philly games, he was absolutely chided, and deservedly so, if I can editorialize for a second. I'm sort of curious, Josh, why do you feel that most guys seem to be going back to the KHL, though? Is it simply for the money? Is it just because most of them are Russian, or are there other facets in your mind?
I think the biggest factor right now is these guys want to get on the ice and play. They want to be at game shape, game level, when or if the NHL season resumes. And if not, they want to earn a paycheck in the meantime. I think the other draw for the KHL is the level of competition. You know, we saw a couple guys, Joe Thornton and Rick Nash, just signed with the Swiss League. They actually tore it up in their first game. Nash had a hat trick. Thornton had 4 assists playing for Davos. So you've got them in the Swiss League with a couple other guys like Couture, Spezza, Seguin, Lucas Pisa's over there. But I think the big draw, the Swedish League, they had a deal where they weren't allowing players to sign partial year contracts, so they weren't putting an NHL contingency clause in there. And a ruling came down that they're not allowed to do that, so I think you'll start to see a lot of the guys returning to Sweden and probably a lot of the North American guys picking up jobs over there as well. So expect to see a lot of Swedish jumps in the next few weeks, provided that no more movement happens on the NHL side of things.
Oh, you would mean, Josh, like that Henrik Lundqvist guy.
I'm pretty sure he will end up over there at some point. From what I've read, he's holding off on that. He's recently become a father. He was married not that long ago. He's pretty well entrenched in New York. So I think he doesn't want to upturn the entire family and go over there. But if there's not going to be hockey this season, in the NHL, you'd think he'd have to go over at some point, because to stay on the bench and miss an entire year of playing would be a huge detriment when we do finally resume the NHL.
Well, wouldn't Lundqvist's best spot be in the Italian league, where you can get all of his custom suits still made?
I don't know if there's an opening there. I think Sean Avery's going to try to sign up for the same team.
Yeah, I mean, this is the point we're at right now. I mean, there's obviously no hockey going on tomorrow. Allegedly, the NHL and NHLPA will get together. They'll do lunch, talk a little escrow, and that's about it. Maybe they'll, talk a little more, hopefully by next Monday, prayfully by next Monday. They get something in gear, anything. But
if not, Chris, there's still the OHL and the WHL going on.
I know.
There's pretty young seasons. I mean, they've only played 2 games pretty much across the spectrum there. So we're not looking at a whole lot of league leaders, a whole bunch of teams undefeated at 2-0. But if you are looking for some scoring and you want to see some fun action in the OHL, based on how it's looked through 2 games, you probably want to check out the London Knights. 16 goals in those 2 games. It's been a lot of fun out there. So if you're not into the OHL, you're not into the WHL, you may as well check it out and see what you can find. If you're local to it, go see a game or at least just start keeping tabs for your local teams, because there is hockey. It does exist.
Hockey
out there.
Does exist.
And it will be interesting to see how the networks adapt to this. I mean, we saw in 2004-05 that CBC started to pick up some of the AHL games. I believe, if I remember correctly, Sportsnet did it as well up here. Do you guys think there's going to be any kind of pickup in the U.S.? Are they going to start to maybe hound some of those leagues, or is it just going to be a dead entity?
I think what you're going to see, at least college hockey-wise, we're going to see a pickup via the CBS network. The Big Ten network's going to have a bit of a boost. They're going to try to, you know, get in on this somehow. Obviously, NBC Sports Network already has a slate of college games planned. They're already trying to add more. As for the AHL, it's really kind of going to be up to local markets as to whether you see action or not. I know the Comcast network, at least in New Jersey, is considering airing the Flyers AHL affiliates games.
Mm-hmm.
So the AHL may be actually a tougher go despite the potential for more marquee players. That may be your toughest bet compared to the other, the junior league, CHL, et cetera.
Yeah, I'm not sure from an infrastructure perspective how the facilities are equipped with the cameras and everything needed to put on a high-quality broadcast for a lot of the buildings in some of the other leagues. So hopefully we will see a couple things. I remember seeing some games years back, some AHL games, and Comcast threw an ECHL game on at one point for the Trenton Titans. But I wouldn't be too optimistic.
Picks are being just running around fast and furious here as the run. And the nice part is at some point people will go on the happy auto pick, as they often do here. The only problem is when doing a keeper league draft, as a universal tip, please watch, because especially for those who have not made keeper picks, it goes very fast. Suddenly it looks like your name's not there, and 3 seconds later you better be ready to pick. So hopefully you got in on this. You're ready to go. Good luck to everybody. Evgeny Malkin probably being the first pick right about now. And, of course, right on cue, my computer freezes, so this ought to be good. We'll see how this goes. This is going to be interesting. There's a lot of windows running. So, like we said, this is a more fluid show because of the news and notes. Like I said, not much. The TSN website, and they asked the fans, point blank, do you think there is going to be a season, and when will it start? After about 75,000 votes, almost 56% of the people say, what season? What does that tell you?
Tells you that there's a lot of pessimists who unfortunately have the long enough term memory that to remember what happened in 2004-05. The difference that's happening this year, though, is that the two sides are talking. This isn't the case of being on completely separate pages, not even sitting down at the same table or even in the same restaurant. At this point, they are, as you said, looking to talk tomorrow. They've had semi-regular meetings up until now. The separation isn't that far between the two versus where it was 7 years ago. So I think that there is a good opportunity that you are going to get the league started up. And as we'll talk about a little bit later, I think a lot of that is going to center around the deadline for the Winter Classic.
Yeah, this is definite. Now, that's not the only drop-dead date in theory. There is this sort of urban legend that's floating around that there's a magic date sometime in middle December, and it's not around Black Friday where the, as I like to call it, the Black Friday Thanksgiving Classic is being shown. So keep in mind that there is no one fluid set dead date or drop dead date at all. Anybody that thinks they know what's really going on, they just don't. I don't think anybody really has a clue what is actually going to happen here. You can make an educated guess, but I'll be honest. I had it right around and I've said this pretty much for a while since, well, early, much earlier when the season was still going on, we'd be talking sometime between Thanksgiving and the second week of December. I'm going to stick with it for now. I'll probably be wrong, but it just seems like something is going to happen one way or the other. There has to be a give. And hopefully that happens sooner rather than later. I mean, there is other news in the NHL that is sort of going on. It's a slow sort of crawl. Obviously, the labor board up in Quebec is going to rule in mid-October. There was a deferred judgment for the NHL authorizing them to lock out. The labor board in Alberta noticed that if you go to TSN, and Americans love to nitpick about this, labor being spelled with a U, just something that it'll always trip me up no matter what I'm going to type, and it actually comes up on my spell check occasionally. But there's going to be rulings that come out in the next few weeks that are going to shape the lockout one way or the other. And all you can really hope at this point is that something breaks right, cooler heads prevail, and there's some common sense.
Chris, do you think that you and labor might be what's holding up the agreements, that they're just stuck on how to spell it in the paperwork? And
oh, come on.
Hey, you never know. I mean, I've seen some odd things. I still remember.
There'll be a lot of parallels that start to come up. Will Gretzky start to speak up, given the money that he's still owed? I don't think so. Lemieux certainly will. Crosby has already started to make his voice known, threatening to go over to Europe as well. But the big guy that seems to be pushing the most seems to be Alexander Ovechkin, who's, from the sounds of it, he's ready to spend the whole year in the KHL if need be, even if the NHL does come back. And to me, you can talk about whether how much his stock has dropped or not, given his play in the last couple years, but with his already looming threat that he's going to play in the KHL if the NHL doesn't send their players to the Sochi Olympics, it's sort of interesting to see what's going to happen with him in particular. I think that he might start to be this maverick that says, you know, why do we need to play in the NHL anymore? You know, the KHL, as you were talking about a little bit before, Josh, has that strength. It is arguably the number two league in across the globe right now. It's possible that this could be the linchpin to really get the KHL going and get it up to that level where you're going to get two leagues that are almost neck and neck in terms of talent.
Yeah, and I think you hit the nail on the head right there with what's happening right now as we're watching the players move over to the KHL, if more and more go, or even just based on who's there already. If the NHL comes back and it's unfavorable, and I know Ovechkin made comments to the fact that if they're cutting his salary, he might not come back. But if you see a handful of guys do it, especially Ovechkin, they bring a little bit more legitimacy to the KHL, a little bit more star power, which in turn makes more of the other players decide to stick around to be part of it. And you could really see a snowball effect where all of a sudden the stars, the big stars, start with Ovechkin and right on down decide to play in the KHL. And they legitimize it, and they improve their revenues, and now the KHL becomes a much stronger league. I don't think it'd be out of the question if a labor agreement isn't reached soon that could happen.
Yeah, this is tough. Here's the thing that the NHL has that any other league overseas, and as much as you want to kill the NHL for being a little too dependent on gate revenue, let's face it, they have bigger capacity arenas. I looked at a couple of attendances from the KHL this weekend. You know, they were mostly in the 3,000-5,000 range. Did a bit of a running joke when we ran the Google Translate and found there was a player by the name of Robin Lubinoff, who was actually commonly known via Google Translate as Favorite Novel. That was his name. kid you not. Obviously, his name is Lubinov. Something went wrong in the lost in translation. But the thing is that they don't have the capacity. They don't have quite the long-term money. Even the president of the KHL acknowledged, we can only overpay these guys for so long. You know, and that period may be defined by, say, 4, 5, 6 years. But is that enough to attract star power in the case you have a 12 or 18 or 24-month lockout? Now, that's obviously a doomsday scenario that nobody wants to approach. But somebody has to at some point, just in case.
It's very true. And the reality is that for all the talk that there has been, and like I said before, about there being the two sides being closer, that the more often meetings happen, the more likely we are to get this thing resolved quicker. For all we know, they could be sitting on these couple points that are the main sticklers for 3 or 4 months. We could be heading into January when we would want to be seeing hockey, when we should be seeing that all-important classic game, the big revenue generator and the big attention drawer for the NHL, and we could not have anything going on. You know, it's at a certain point, the players are going to continue to go to the KHL, or they're going to look more seriously at forming their barnstorming tours. They're going to do this, that, and the other. But it essentially comes down to how much is Donald Fehr willing to budge, how much is Gary Bettman willing to budge, and if those two egos, which we both know are pretty big, two guys who are on completely opposite ends of the spectrum and doing the most for their clientele, you could really conceivably see another season loss. And if that happens, it's almost unfathomable, but you could start to see such a mass move from the NHL to other leagues. I mean, I remember back in 2004-05, there was talk about all these leagues starting up in Canada. You were going to get the return of the World Hockey Association. You were going to get a couple other starting up as well. The difference here is that you have this league that is well-founded, that, you know, attendance being what it is or what it could be, still has a basis and still has a ground where a lot of NHLers have already made that migration over. I mean, Yammer Yager will attest as to whether or not it was good, and if he's asked, he'll tell players, you know what, it's not a bad idea for you to go over there for at least a year or two. It really could be not the end of North American hockey, but it could start to be the degradation of North American hockey, where you start to return to that 1970s, 1980s period where the Russian stars are playing in Russia, the Swedish stars are playing in Sweden, etc., and you're getting this not as the global hockey leader, but the North American hockey leader.
Yes, it's very true. I mean, look, we did a piece in the very infancy of when it looked a little bleak as far as hockey, especially with the rise of Jim Pulcilli, and of course, you know, we'll eventually do something on the fall of Jim Pulcilli as well here on the Hockey Writers Live. But there was definite talk of a new league, a new network. There was a lot going on at that time. And what I noticed, at least back then, that is definitely different. Now, back then, I mean, there was, as has been said so many times, there was no talk whatsoever. At least now, even if there's not much, there's something going on, it still doesn't mean that there is not a huge gap.
Mm-hmm.
And there's you don't want to be too much of a pessimist, but you do have to admit the obvious, that there are definite problems going on.
Mm-hmm.
There's not going to be an easy solution. Revenue sharing is probably the biggest issue, and they have to solve it. I mean, this is a fundamental concept that should have been solved 8 years ago. If they don't solve it now, in 5, 6 years, when we have another lockout, if Gary Bettman is not literally picked up by the seat of his pants and thrown out of the New York offices by whoever, the owners, etc. I'm giving up my NHL fandom right then and there. I'll take my bike and go home.
But here comes the question then. I mean, realistically, Gary did the best that he could for the owners in the two previous lockouts, and overall they took it a little bit more on the chin in 94-95. They came out in spades better out of the 04-05 lockout. If it does come to the point where Bettman is tossed out, who replaces him? You know, are you going to get Bill Daly to do it? Or does he – I don't know if he has the personality to be able to be that central guy. I don't know if he wants to be that central guy. It's the most demanding job in sports. There's no question is to be a commissioner. And to be in hockey right now where you are the lifeblood of Canada for its sport and entertainment, where you're building a spot in the U.S., where it's being talked about more and more ever since the rise of Crosby and the rise of Stamkos and the rise of guys in all these markets that you at one point thought were going to fold. I don't know if there's a guy who is willing to put his neck out there and say, yeah, I'll be the commissioner.
I'm telling you right now, if they could find a way to get this guy enough, there's two guys. The one is probably a no just because he's more entrenched in politics right now. The second guy would be interesting just because he's in a little bit of limbo right now as far as the St. Louis Blues organization. But that is something that we're going to get to in just a little bit. We're halfway through the show right now. Phone number, as always, is 1-347-826-7358. We're bringing in the heavy fantasy hockey artillery here on the show. I'm going to bring in Mr. X and one of my very good friends on the show, Michael Clifford. Hopefully this works. And good evening. Folks, let this be a lesson to you. The button never works. Good
Hello
evening,
there.
Guys. How you doing?
I'm doing well. How's it going? How's it going by you?
It could be better if we knew there was definitely a hockey season going on. But other than that, it's not too bad right now.
Yeah, I know. I know. I've had a couple sleepless nights over too. So I guess we're all just pulling for the same thing.
It's definitely tough. I mean, for people that don't know you, buddy, introduce yourself and level of expertise and all that good stuff.
Oh, well, my name is my real name is Michael Clifford, but on Twitter I go by at Slim Cliffy. I've been in hockey pools of some sort, one way or the other, probably for about the last 15 years. But I've only really gotten into fantasy hockey probably over the last three. I started writing for Trader X on his website, fantasytrade411.com, last year for the last season, and I was actually really looking forward to putting in a full year this year, but it looks like I might have to make do with about 60 games, hopefully.
That seems to be still the going track. We had a choice. It was almost like the little kid's first grade math test. You have a choice between A, 48, B, 55, C, somewhere in the low 60s, and D, 72. The D is looking very unlikely at this point. But A, B, and C at least still have a slight shot here as I attempt to take a let's see, which player shall I take here in the draft? This could be tough. I really need a guy that takes up a lot of time. Plus, minus doesn't matter. Okay. This will tend to work. There we go. But just picked up Mark Streit in the sixth round. This draft is flying by extremely quickly because people have their cues up and they're ready to roll, which is always nice to know. And this is where it gets tough. Now, X is supposed to join us at some point. I sent out the message a little earlier, and hopefully he can make it in before 9. But I've seen a lot this year. And, Michael, I figured I'd ask you this just from one fantasy hockey expert to another. If you do a season projection, could you do it with a clear conscience knowing there's a lockout coming?
You sort of can. You can and you can't. What I've found myself doing a lot more now when trying to project how a player is going to end up is I've been using goals per game, assists per game, shots per game, you know, penalty minutes per game and things like that, or even using per 60 minutes. It could be very misleading to try to project somebody based off an 82 game schedule when, you know, the reality is if we do have hockey, it'll be more likely, you know, 55 or 60. It does get a little tricky with some players, you know, Gaborik, Kessler, you know, some of the players that are projected to be out to November or December. You know, if the season starts in 3 weeks like it was supposed to, or 2.5 weeks, I guess, these guys are probably ranked outside the top 50 or at least the top 40 for forwards. And now, if we do have a season and they're actually able to play the very first game of the season, you know, whenever it might be, end of November, start of December, mid-December, whatever, then they go from outside the top 50. I mean, Gaborik, surely, depending on the league, would be a top 15 to 20. And Ryan Kessler would probably be, you know, somewhere in the top 30, top 40, whereas right now you'd have to project them much, much lower than that.
Yeah, this is where it's tough. I mean, you're also going to have, in case this does happen, say you had a November or December return, you're going to have to get these players back. You're going to have to get a lot of them in shape. Some of them are going to be in varying degrees of shape. This is not even a situation like the NFL where they obviously got it done a lot better and a lot closer. You still had a process. But with the NHL, it's going to be a lot worse because you're bringing these players from all over the place as opposed to one pretty much centralized location. You're going to have some guys that really haven't done much during the lockout. I mean, Marty Brodeur could eat a bunch of Krispy Kremes. It's not going to really matter. You know, he usually takes 15 to 20 games to get in shape anyway.
Yeah, that's his normal training regimen, I believe.
Hey, whatever beats the Rangers, I don't care. I'll be the first one to admit it. Might be ugly from a fantasy hockey standpoint, but he's still somewhat effective. But it's going to be interesting to see how some of these projections that have been made pan out now that the games played are going to change. I saw one, Mike, you're going to appreciate this. I saw one literally, and I wish I could kid about this. Anze Kopitar projected for 96 points this year.
Based on how long a season? 100?
Here's the kicker. Expected to play 80 games, 96 points. I think that came actually straight from the Fantasy Sports Forecaster, if I remember right.
For what it's worth, he is signed in Sweden right now, so maybe against that level of competition, he could pull it off.
Yeah, that's true.
Okay, now how about this? ESPN. Sidney Crosby. 76 games played. 113 points.
You lost me talking about hockey when you mentioned ESPN.
Yeah. See? Now, look, I know, at least internet-wise, behind the scenes, there are a lot of very credible people at ESPN. The face of what you see is not what you see behind the scenes. But even that is a bit much. I'm looking at some of the ESPN projections on my draft board right now. Let's see some good ones.
You want to laugh real hard? Go look at Mika Kiprasov's projection on the ESPN draft.
I still can't believe it.
Like, I did a draft the other night, and just because of where he was ranked, he's my third goalie, and I took him in like It was like the 14th round.
Jeez.
It is absolutely ridiculous where they have him ranked.
Oh, here's a good one, Mike. James Van Riemsdyk in ESPN is projected for almost 300 shots on goal.
Yeah, I don't think so. Not unless they count
Phantom League, or
not unless they count practice.
I'm telling you, I mean, just some of these, no matter what they try, they're not going to get it right. And some are lowballed badly. I saw some of the hockey news projections, and well, if you go THN and you see New Jersey Devils, it must be like an instant 5 points off right off the bat before you even get started. There's a few teams where they tend to just kill numbers. I'm stunned looking at some of these. It's amazing. I mean, look, you have to make gambles here. You know, you're in the business of speculating. You have to expect reaches somewhere. If you didn't make any reaches, what the heck is the point of, well, what you're doing? But if I throw a few names out there and throw their point totals out there, you tell me if it's too high, too low, or if they are smoking a substance that we can't say on the air.
Far away.
Let's see. You know, we'll just go around the round table here.
Mm-hmm.
First one up, or I should say first victim. Tomas Fleischmann of the Florida Panthers. He is projected an average of 3 sites to end up with 27 goals and 40 assists this year. Is it too high, too low, or are we smoking something? I will start
to say
with
that
Josh.
Anybody on the Panthers are going to get that high? Yeah, you're going way too high. I can't see, even if this were an 82 game season, I can't see anybody on the Panthers going above 60 points at most. More likely in the mid 50s.
The only way I see Fleischmann hitting that number is if he is sent to Vancouver in the Luongo deal and plays on the top line. In that case, yes, he can do it.
Wow.
And for me, here's the thing that it seems like they're making their projections based on an 82-game season. But he's had a problem staying healthy his whole career.
Yep.
You know, I just I was just on a hunch. I just looked it up real quick on Hockey Reference, and I was right. He's never played more than 75 games in his career.
Yep.
So if he goes into the season and we play 60 games and he misses 10% of the games, so now he's only playing 54, he's not going to crack 20 goals.
He's not going to come close.
No.
I mean, he's lucky if he gets 50 to 55 points again.
I agree.
In that range.
I think he's never cracked 40 assists. I don't know where, you know, he might have the career year, but I think last year was probably his career year.
Yeah, it seems to be the growing consensus. Okay, here's another one, guys. Blake Wheeler. And I know Boston fans love to sit there and go, it's Blake Wheeler's fault. But how about this? 30 goals and 40 assists for Blake Wheeler this year.
As a Winnipeg Jets fan, I say yes, it's 100% going to happen, no matter how many games are played in the year. No, seriously, I put him more around 40.
Yeah, see, that's my problem. You know, where do you go with a guy that, you know, has potential? There's no question that if a guy like Blake Wheeler gets rid of his drive streaks, he's a 70 to 80 point guy, actually. But it never fails. This guy always seems to find a way to have that god-awful streak in there somewhere.
And I think that's the question you run into for a guy like this in a shortened season. If there's fewer games, his margin of error is totally different. He might have longer time for a hot streak and be able to sustain it long enough to be one of the leading scorers, relatively speaking. Or that dry streak could be half the season. I mean, I think he started off this past year with a terrible October. I only get a goal until probably the middle of November or something like that. So if he starts off like that, well, now you're halfway through the season. However, if he starts off like he did in December, maybe he's a decent player. I still think those numbers are high, but when you have a guy who's streaky or who has those dry spells, you know, giving him 82 games to work it out is a lot different than what he's got to do in those 60 games.
The only X factor with him, though, is that he is in the final year of a contract, so if he wants to raise his profile, as most NHLers will do as they get close to that re-sign time, he's going to up his game, so he might get a little bit closer to that point per game. I don't know if he has the skill, as you said, with the way how streaky he is, but you know maybe he gets up to a 0.75, a 0.8 ratio rather than where his numbers have been.
Yeah, I just looked up Blake Wheeler real quick. He didn't score his first goal until November 17th, and then he had one goal for the next month after that.
He started very slow. He kind of started off like goal, at least goal production wise, how Erik Karlsson started off the year. Karlsson was just the shot machine that couldn't hit the back of the net, and then he snapped. You know, he snapped in little bits and pieces, and that's kind of what Blake Wheeler did last year. To get, you know, his goal total. He started off real slow, and then he had a couple little runs, and that was enough to get him, you know, in that range. I can't see him getting the 30 goals. I just can't. He's just not that type of player. Now, this gets worse before it gets better. I promise you. Here's an interesting one. Nathan Horton. Fresh off the concussion problems of last year, he is projected for 63 points.
So they're projecting him to set a career high next year coming off a vicious concussion.
Yep.
I just don't see that happening.
I wish I was kidding. I don't know.
The guys had declining scoring 3 years running. Why not?
Yeah. I'll be honest. There's no conventional rhyme or reason with these at puns. I've looked at this, and you try to analyze it as rationally as possible, and then you just come to the conclusion quickly that this is not going to happen. And that's where you're kind of at with this. I mean, I'll throw another name or three out there as well at some point. Just wait till you see the Brandon Dubinsky numbers. You think that's bad? You haven't seen anything yet, but we'll put them out there. All right, here we go. Brandon Dubinsky, now of the Columbus Blue Jackets, ladies and gentlemen, projected to play 76 games and have 57 points. Mind you, playing over 20 minutes a night.
I mean, this past year, obviously, he tanked horribly. Prior to that, though, he was I know he was 50-plus points, and I know he was around 20 minutes a game. So I don't think it's out of the realm of possibility for Brandon Dubinsky to put up those kinds of numbers. My concern is with the supporting cast he has in Columbus that there's not going to be anybody else to help share the load if he were to. And if he started that way in October, he'd be getting shut down by top lines by mid-November. It's within his skill set to get there, but on that team, I just don't see it happening. I mean, 2030 is probably his cap, as high as I'd expect to see him go, but I don't know if I can see him getting that high.
Here's the thing for me. Rick Nash had 59 points last year on that team. And Rick Nash has all the talent in the world, certainly way more than Brandon Dubinsky, and they're expecting him to put 57 points up with essentially the same supporting cast. I think that's a bit of a reach for me.
Yeah, I'll have to make that a consensus. I think he would be good for around 40, 45, but to get into the 50s, Columbus would have to have a miracle come in. I mean, I don't know if Steve Mason has that hot a stick now that all of a sudden he's going to start jumping into plays or what, but yeah, I can't see him going that high.
Yeah, the only way Columbus is going to have any success is to spread it around, too. I think it'd be way more likely to see a whole bunch of guys in that 40 range because they're spreading out their offense. That's the only way they're even going to put up points. So to have it all come down to one guy like Dubinsky, the team's not built like that, and I don't think he can get there.
I think 2020 is certainly, you know, reasonable, 2020, 2025 or something like that.
Oh, God, if he doesn't hit 2020, the few remaining Columbus fans will be screaming.
there will be raiding in Columbus if that doesn't happen. They have an astounding 8 goalies right now in Columbus. 8.
Yeah, you've heard of scoring by committee. I guess they'll go for goaltending by committee.
They might have to.
But they have a cannon, so if things get out of hand, there's always that cannon in Nationwide Arena.
Okay. A few other of the ones that either seem to stick out for whatever reason, or they're just, I don't know, for lack of a better term, seem to be out there. Logan Couture, another one of these guys that's been, sort of like that B or B-plus player, projected for 75 points this year.
A little bit early. Maybe a year and a half down the road, but it's too soon.
I think that's definitely his potential. I mean, I don't know. I think the thing with him is he's a player on the rise, playing on a team that's in their decline. So I really don't think he'll reach his potential unless he gets out of San Jose, because I think they're only just a few years away from having to rebuild.
Yeah, I think the San Jose thing is key. To me, it's just the logjam there, that if you tell me they're getting rid of Joe Thornton and Couture can pick up some of those minutes and some of that puck, then he's got a shot at it. But I think with the guys on that team, there's just not enough to go around for him to add that much to his scoring total.
Yeah, I see an immense problem with what's going on in San Jose. I mean, you can almost go to every major position in San Jose and go, God, there's a young guy battling an old guy for time, at least as far as the major positions. And this, to me, is the biggest problem. How they make that transition, I don't think it's going to be graceful, to be honest. And Couture is one of those players that could be a bit of a casualty as far as that. So, if I'm looking at this, I'm at the very least very hesitant. There's no way I could sit there and come even close to 75 points right now. Oh, boy. Here comes the next one. This is going to be painful. KHL Wunderkind, or at least he was when he was over there. He went there for a couple of years. Now he's in Calgary. Yuri Hudler is projected to get 61 points. That's right, 6-1.
I think that one falls under the category of what were you smoking when you came up with these projections.
Yeah, I mean, mind you, he's expected to play 81 games, but still. That may be almost the case of even more of what you're maybe smoking. So, tough call. Hudler is a guy who can score. That much is true. He's also a guy who plays defense about as well as a role of Charmin. it's not pretty. So, I don't know, guys. I mean, that's another tough one. I've got a bunch of them. Believe me, there's a whole lot of them here.
I see a big regression coming for Hoedler. He shot almost at a 20% clip last year, 19.7.
Yeah.
He's a career just over 13 shooter. So, no, that's just way too high for me.
Yeah, what were the totals for that one, Chris?
27, 34, 61 points.
Yeah, on a team when even Aginla's had some struggling times, and I think he was around 67, 68 points last year, there's no way with the work that he did that he's going to carry Hoedler along that far for that many points.
Oh, wow. We got a few minutes left in the live show, folks. We're going to go over one that I guarantee is going to blow people's minds when I put this one out there.
I'm scared.
And it's not even this one's bad. I still can't believe that and this was not just one publication that printed this in print, but this was at least three or four that I've seen. Jonathan Huberdeau, 58 points in 75 games for the Florida Panthers this year.
Yeah, you weren't kidding.
Yeah, that's my thoughts exactly.
I told you I'd save the best for almost last.
They're
bad.
Well,
obviously
he's going to pair up with Thomas Fleischmann, and they're just going to tear it up.
Oh, of course they are. In Vancouver.
This is the same problem as Dubinsky. Who's Huberdeau going to play with that's going to get him all those points? He's not going to play on that top line with Weiss, Fleischmann, and Versteeg.
No.
Who else is he going to play with? Peter Mueller?
Now, I think what they're counting on, Mike, is Mueller being – Mueller's a true high-risk, high-just high pitfall. Screw high-risk, high-reward. This is high-risk, high pitfall. You either can hit the mother load and Mueller goes on a 20-point and 15-game stretch like he did with Colorado before he got hurt the last time, or he plays three games and winds up out for the rest of his career.
So I think what they're actually depending on, guys, is that with the lockouts, the Florida Panthers are going to be dissolved and Huberdeau and Fleischmann are going to end up on completely different teams, and they're going to end up like in Pittsburgh or the Rangers or somebody like that.
You have to wonder what's really going on here, to be honest.
And while we hit that, from a fantasy perspective, do you guys ever factor that kind of thing in, where you look at a guy who's rumored to be traded, like a Roberto Luongo, and you look at his performance, and you look at where he's rumored to be going, does that affect his draft position, just the fact that he's likely to be traded?
I know it does for me.
I've seen
Corey Schneider go in the first round of a 1-year draft. For me, that's a little crazy. I'm not taking either of them until I know one or the other is gone. You know, well, obviously it's going to be Luongo, but until Luongo is signed and or traded, like signed, sealed, delivered to wherever he's going, I'm not touching Schneider. And I'm probably not going to touch Luongo either. If he goes to Florida, you know, they're not going to be anywhere as near as competitive as last year. I can't see them being. They're just that last year was a fluke for them. It's kind of like the Baltimore Orioles.
Absolutely. And we're gonna exit stage left on the live portion here, and we will see you next Sunday night.